Bill could take a few tips in, you know, sartorial elegance. When you came to me, I don't work with that suit.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to our October 24th meeting. If you all rise, please, and join me in the flag salute. With that, Madam Clerk, if you'll read the changes to our agenda, please.
Changes to today's agenda. Consent amended item B3 is the submittal of a resolution amending the position allocation list for Fund Center 104 Administrative Office by deleting two Deputy County Administrative Officer positions and adding one Assistant County Officer and one Administrative Analyst 1-2-3 or Principal Administrative Analyst position. Recommend approval and instruct chairperson to sign. Staff is requesting the title on the cover sheet be amended, correcting the title Assistant County Officer to Assistant County Administrative Officer. Item B5, the following track map has been received and has satisfied all the conditions of approval that were established in the public hearing on its tentative map. A, track 2717, a proposed subdivision resulting in 14 lots by Belridge Park 2, LLC, 13th Street, Oceano. Reject the offer of dedication for streets and public pedestrian access easements without prejudice to future acceptance. Act on a resolution accepting the relinquishment of access rights along Belridge Street. Act on a resolution to accepting an aviation easement, 4th District. Recommend approval and instruct chairperson to sign. Staff is requesting the staff report be amended to include the attached aviation easement that was inadvertently left out of the packet. B6 is the submittal of a resolution modifying the bylaws of the Bicycle Advisory Committee to vacate seats when members are frequently absent at scheduled meetings, all districts. Recommend approval and instruct chairperson to sign. Due to a technical correction, the resolution for this item needs to be replaced. The amended resolution is attached for your approval. The recommendation remains the same. And those are the changes to today's agenda.
Thank you. At this time, I would like to entertain a motion for the presentations.
So moved. Second.
Moved by Supervisor Patterson, seconded by Supervisor Bianchi. A roll call, please.
Mr. Patterson.
Aye.
Mrs. Bianchi.
Yes.
Mr. Ovitt.
Aye.
Mr. Asajian.
Aye. At this time, I would like to ask Marcia Stillman to come forward, please. Is Mr. Sebach around, or Bill will take his spot? Okay, it gives me great pleasure to read this resolution commending Marcia Stillman for 18 years of service to the County of San Luis Obispo. The following resolution is hereby offered and read. Whereas on August 29, 1988, Marcia began her career with Slo County as an accountant auditor 3. Stepping in as supervisor of the Property Tax Division of the Auditor Controller's Department, bringing with her over 17 years of experience in the property tax field from Fresno County. And whereas, Marcia has consistently performed her duties in an exemplary fashion, receiving frequent thanks from city, school, and special district leaders, as well as taxpayers that she and her staff have assisted over the years. And whereas, Ms. Stillman played a key role in implementing the TTER plan that has provided millions of dollars of additional revenue to San Luis Obispo County without any additional local tax burden. And whereas, audits by the state controller and independent accountants of Marcia's property tax and debt management records have always resulted in favorable reports for the County of San Luis Obispo and earned a strong level of trust in the County Auditor's Office by taxing agencies and bondholders over the past 18 years. It is fitting that the board recognizes Stillman's achievements and at this time. Now, therefore, be it resolved and ordered by the Board of Supervisors that Marcia Stillman is hereby commended and thanked for a dedicated service to the County of San Luis Obispo and its citizens, and is wished the best of health and happiness in her future. We thank you, and if you'll come forward, accept.
Bill Estrada, Assistant County Auditor Controller. I've known Marcia for about 18 years, ever since she came to work for the county. And since that time, she's been an integral part of the management team of the auditor's office. We were fortunate enough some years ago to kind of steal Marcia away from Fresno County. You see, there's 58 tax managers in the state of California, one for each county, and Marcia is by far on the top of the pyramid. The resolution mentions her expertise, and that can't be overstated enough. She is by far one of the premier experts in California property tax. The state controller has called on her numerous occasions to speak at conferences, to conduct training to other county departments, and to help interpret legislation that's come down from Sacramento. She was instrumental in developing the first statewide manual on California property tax procedures, and it's laid out for all California counties. So we have been extremely fortunate to have Marcia on our staff. The funny thing, kind of funny, is when the state comes down to actually audit our property tax division, they know who Marcia is. Her reputation precedes her, and the auditors are almost apologetic for having to go through some of the processes, procedures that she helped develop. They're reviewing. So we have come through those audits very clean, but not just because of her reputation. Her work has been impeccable over the 30 years that she has been doing, 30 plus years she has been working in property tax. That's one of the reasons we got her from Fresno County. So we have been fortunate to have her expertise. And the wonderful thing about Marcia, she's always willing to share that with other agencies and districts. A lot of our local agencies, our schools, our cities, our special districts have gained the benefit from Marcia's knowledge and expertise. So we're thankful to have Marcia here in this county, and been very pleased with everything that she's ever done in respect to her work in the office. But now it's time for Marcia to move on, and she's really going to put away her property tax and get into the things she likes, which are spending time with her family and friends. She's into gardening, so she'll be out there messing with her flowers and stuff. And then she's been into arts and craft work for some time. She actually has a crafts room in her house. And I've been trying to get her to make me some ceramic chickens for years, so maybe now she'll do that. And, of course, she really likes her wine tasting. And, well, she actually loves her wine tasting. And I didn't know until she told me that you really didn't have to leave the home to enjoy your wine tasting. I thought it was the event. But anyway, to Marcia, on behalf of the auditor's office and their staff, on behalf of all the county employees that you have served over the years, for your dedication, your hard work to all the agencies and committees you have served on, thank you for years of public service, and we wish you only the very best in your retirement.
Please.
Boy, 37 years, the time's really flown by, and it's kind of like when they say that time flies by when you're having fun, and it's so true, especially when you have a staff that you enjoy working with and you really, truly love your job. I was last week I was cleaning out my desk, and I ran across an email from Gail Wilcox at the administrative office thanking me for taking time out to explain the complexities of my job. And in that email, she stated, "I always enjoy talking with employees who are so passionate about and committed to their jobs. You're definitely one of those public servants that the public should be very glad to have working for them. That's what it's all about, doing your job to the best of your ability, enjoying what you do, and serving the public. 2 weeks ago at the statewide property tax managers meeting, I was acknowledged for being a guru of property tax. A special thanks to Jerry, my boss, and for Bill, his assistant, for their confidence and support all these years. Without that support and the flexibility given to me, I would not be the person I am today. Thank you.
Marcia. It seems like there's a person who want to take a picture. Why don't you and Bill come up front here? We'll have a picture with the Board of Supervisors.
Sure.
And others, something for your memories.
Something she can throw darts at.
Want to come in the center here?
If I'd have known, I'd, you know.
There we go.
Thank you. Congratulations and thank you.
I was kidding with Marcia when she came by about who was going to take her job, because with her patience and perseverance, somebody's going to have to inherit that every Tuesday that we form a new tax district. And I know we've had conversations on how to try to finagle around things, but it's been a privilege, and I hope that the new person's going to be able to take the job.
It's going to be big shoes to fill in. We'll see. Thank you and good luck.
A wine glass.
With that, if Ms. Bianchi will do the honors of reading the next resolution, please.
If Cindy Marie Apsey would come to the podium, please. This is a resolution designating October 2006 as San Luis Obispo County Domestic Violence Awareness Month. The following resolution is hereby offered in red. Whereas the Domestic Violence Task Force has adopted the local theme, Californians Uniting to End Domestic Violence. And whereas an estimated 4 million women each year in our country are victims of intimate partner abuse, and an estimated 3.3 million children witness domestic violence in their homes each year. And whereas approximately a quarter of all crime victims served by the San Luis Obispo County District Attorney Victim Witness Center are victims of domestic violence, and whereas our county's women's shelters provided over 9,400 nights of shelter to victims last year, with over 60% being children, and whereas our community's awareness and intolerance of domestic violence and child abuse will help ensure the safety and health of our families and homes, now therefore be it resolved that the San Luis Obispo County Board of Supervisors designates October 2006 as San Luis Obispo County Domestic Violence Awareness Month.
Cindy Marie Apsey, Director of the Victim Witness Assistance Center for the District Attorney's Office. And Jerry Shea was not able to be here today, and he sends his regards. I want to really thank the board again for recognizing this important event, Domestic Violence Awareness Month. And while we have made tremendous progress over the past 20 years in responding to domestic violence and providing services for victims and their children, and working with offenders, the area of prevention is still an area that continues to need attention. So I'm delighted to invite up Beth Robb and Lindsay Dunn from our Delta Project, an exciting new project that they're going to tell you about. Lindsay and Beth.
Hi, my name is Lindsay Dunn. I work for the Women's Shelter Program. My title is Outreach Development. And we've recently had the pleasure and the excitement to work on a brand new prevention campaign here in San Luis Obispo. We got money for a grant to put money towards prevention, and our campaign is called Beat the Punch. Our target audience is young men, 18 to 24, so we are focusing on the young men here at Cal Poly. We have had a whole bunch of collateral made up that we have goodie bags for you. But we've had a very successful coaster campaign that we've gotten a lot of local businesses and establishments to distribute for us in their local restaurants and establishments. So they have our logo on them. We have T-shirts for you in there. We have wristbands right here. They say Beat the Punch with our website, which is www.violencefreecommunity.com. We've also had a lot of success with getting we had a banner over Marsh Street announcing October as Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and the website as well. We've had a couple of we've been out at Farmers Market spreading the word. I had the pleasure of attending the WOW Week, which is the week of welcome before Cal Poly, and I got to meet hundreds, if not thousands, of brand new students and let them know about our campaign, our Beat the Punch campaign. Right now it's an awareness campaign. We are working with Cal Poly to get Beat the Punch on Cal Poly campus and a presence there, a permanent presence of Cal Poly campus and student life there. So we're working to raise awareness and bring people to talk about the issue of dating and domestic violence, which is a really important issue here in our community. So we'll be working here, and we're here for the long haul. So I hope you see Beat the Punch around the community in the future. So.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate all your hard work.
Thank you for your support.
You're welcome.
Thank you for all the work that you do.
At this time, I would like to welcome Mr. Don Peterson, our lobbyist from Sacramento, to address us.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. It's a pleasure to be here to give you a report on the just concluded legislative session. We are here, of course, to also prepare for next year's legislative session, which will begin this year on December the 4th in the beginning of a new two-year session of the legislature when approximately one-third of the legislature will be new. New members will be sworn in, officers chosen at the beginning of December. Bills can be introduced on that day, and then there will be a recess until right after the 1st of January when the legislature will start up in earnest. As far as San Luis Obispo County is concerned and legislation of interest to the county sponsored two bills. In legislative parlance, that means you were the one that asked the legislator to introduce the bill. AB 2701 by Assemblymember Blakesley, of course, is the one dealing with the Los Osos Community Services District. AB 1562, which was authored by Senator Abel Maldonado on your behalf, requires that the state of California reimburse the county for trial costs associated with those folks who are at the Atascadero State Hospital. The bill, as we originally submitted it, was considerably broader than the one that was finally signed by the governor. The original bill would have required the state to pick up all of the costs that might have been incurred by the county for any inhabitants of Atascadero State Hospital. The Assembly Appropriations Committee narrowed the bill basically to trial costs and any costs associated with trials and those individuals who are being held at Atascadero. I think we will go back again to the legislature and seek to get that section of the bill that was stricken included in legislation in 2007, and Senator Maldonado has indicated a willingness to do that. AB 2683 was authored by Assemblymember Negrete McLeod at the behest of the California State Firefighters Association. AB 2683 would have established a base rate of pay for CDF firefighters at the average of the five largest municipal fire departments in the state. So it would have fixed the firefighters' pay at that rate, and should there be a raise in Los Angeles County or Los Angeles City or Orange County or San Diego, then the CDF pay would have gone up. The governor vetoed the bill. Counties in the main opposed the bill because, as you know, those counties that have contracts with CDF for firefighting services are obligated simply to pick up the costs. And so this bill is an urgency bill. It would have gone into effect upon the governor's signature long after you had passed your budget, long after you had dealt with the costs that might have incurred. So we do expect, however, that the firefighters will be back probably to negotiate the bill at some point, because this bill was a gut and amend. It came in at the very last part of the legislature when Mrs. Negrete McLeod stripped another bill of its content and put this measure in there. The governor did sign Senator Cogdill's, or Assemblymember Cogdill, after the next election he'll be Senator Cogdill, Assemblymember Cogdill's bill to provide funding to counties for pest control, very important for us. There were a number of bills introduced to alter the workers' compensation legislation that was passed just last year. Most of the bills dealt with public safety workers, and the governor split the baby. He signed one and vetoed one. So he vetoed Senator Parada's 815, which would have established a new rate of reimbursement for public safety workers on permanent disability, effectively doubling the rate of reimbursement for anyone under receiving workers' comp. He did, however, sign AB 1368, which sets up a special category for public safety workers. He also signed AB 1634. That's the bill that reimbursed us for last year's special election. He vetoed two bills having to do with abandoned vehicles that we supported very strongly, because it really gets to the heart of some problems which have been pointed out in this county. The bills would have allowed the county, in conjunction with your cities, to receive another $1 per car registered in the county to apply to the cost of picking up abandoned vehicles and vehicles that posed nuisances in your community. The governor vetoed both of those bills, and his veto message was pretty clear. He thinks that both of those measures should be subject to Proposition 218, and indicated that he would not sign measures increasing or allowing you to and city councils to increase the fees. So we probably won't try that again unless there is a change of heart on this matter. The Speaker's cable television bill passed. We raise a number of objections to the bill because it really does cut into your franchise authority and your ability to regulate the use of county right-of-ways. Nonetheless, the bill passed with hardly without opposition, despite the concerns that were expressed by both cities and counties, particularly in urban areas, but also in rural areas, and the kind of service that individuals would get. There were a number of other bills that were taken up this year, and I won't go through all of them, Mr. Chairman, but I do want to point out three bills that did not make it that we supported very strongly. If you look on page three of my handout, SB 1127 was a bill that was set up at the request of the governor to assist folks involved in the salmon fishing industry because of the problems there. We supported that bill. The irony, I should point out to you, is that SB 1127 was our omnibus bill, which we had several items for San Luis Obispo County. The bill was taken to be used as a salmon bill, and then it died. So we didn't get either the omnibus bill or the salmon restoration bill. AB 1717 was a bill sponsored by the assessors that would have established a new grant program for property tax administration. The bill was held in the Senate Appropriations Committee. The bill would appropriate funds essentially to county assessors to pay for the costs of incurred in property tax administration. there really was not a lot of opposition to the bill, but there was concern expressed by a number of county supervisors from throughout the state because it gave to the assessor the final authority to decide where the money would be spent. So the bill was held in the Senate Appropriations Committee. We expect that the governor will put this money in the budget for 07-08, and the assessors will come back with a new piece of legislation to deal with this. AB 1665, which was introduced by your neighboring legislator to the north, Assemblymember John Laird, was one of a number of flood control slash land use bills that did not pass. The issue of flood control and the state's liability in the area, which came to the forefront because of a lawsuit arising out of a flood in Yuba County, the Paterno decision, which cost the state almost $500 million, has caused a great deal of concern both in the legislature and in the administration. And the concern is that who is going to be responsible in the final analysis for the failure of a flood protection structure. It would seem as a result of the Paterno decision that the state is the deep pocket here. Remember, that's $400 million for one flood, one day, in one county. If that were to occur at all of the so-called critical erosion sites now identified by the Corps of Engineers, it would cost in the billions of dollars. So the state is concerned about doing several things. One, shifting liability for all flood construction devices, both levees, dams, setbacks, whatever you've got, shifting the liability from the state to the local agency responsible for that levee. So you own a levee, it's yours. And you will be responsible if the state gets its way. You will be responsible not only for its upkeep and maintenance, but you'll also be responsible for any liability that might occur upon the failure of that levee. Two, the legislature is very interested in applying new restrictions to construction of residences and others and other structures behind levees so that counties and cities will have to restrict the development in any kind of area that could potentially be subject to flood if the area is not protected at least by 200-year levee is what the legislature is looking for. I should point out that the federal government is looking at 500-year protection in most of the country in order to establish the parameters that, as far as the federal government is concerned. Thirdly, I think you can expect legislation that will require flood insurance for anyone who lives behind those levees and will require you as the local agency responsible to enforce that. So that is what was not done having to do with water slash flood control legislation. And I think that's one of the items, as you'll see in our agenda, that we would expect will be taken up in the 2007 session. The legislature, along with lots of other people, is awaiting the outcome of the November election, not just for who is elected to which public office, but the passage or the failure to pass the four bond measures on the ballot. This is the largest single attempt at bond passage in the history, not only of the state of California, but the history of the United States. So if all four of those measures pass, along with Proposition 84, which is also sitting on the ballot, we could potentially see another $47 to $48 billion in bond sales in the state of California, $6 billion of which, or $7 billion, depending upon which number you use, would be applied to flood control. Right now, the polls say that the transportation measure, Proposition 1B, and the flood control measure, Proposition 1E, are leading, and the other two, 1C and 1D, are trailing in the polls. But the only poll that counts is the one that will occur on Election Day. And I should point out that if, particularly if the flood control measure, neither of them, Proposition 84 or Proposition 1E pass, this will put a tremendous strain on the state general fund, because the state has identified erosion sites, particularly in the Central Valley, but also in the coastal areas, that need to be fixed. And they have given notification of the danger, and if those are not now fixed, clearly, I think the state of California will be very concerned about its liability in not applying funds to solving those problems. Prison reform. The governor called a special session, an extraordinary session on prison reform. Essentially, nothing happened. You can sum it up. What did happen, however, is that the federal judge directed that the health care system, as part of the federal or as part of the state prisons, be turned over to the court-appointed receiver. And so the health care system, in as part of the state corrections in California, is now being operated under federal control. But I would expect that the legislature will take this up again. The governor has indicated he will call another extraordinary session to commence at the same time the regular session starts. I think you can expect that will be high on the list of things that need to be solved. Health care. Governor vetoed the major bills on health care this year. I think it's fair to say that with a new legislature and with a governor in office with a brand new four-year term, you can see health care coming back again. Right now, the state is estimating that, everything else being even, the state could be short $4 to $6 billion of necessary revenue to meet its expectations. If you're like most boards of supervisors in the state, you sort of yawn and say, so what else is new? That's what you've been telling us for years, Peterson. Change your tune. Well, the only way the tune will be changed, obviously, is if the revenue goes up unexpectedly and provides the state with more funds than is now expected. So it looks like another year in which we will be fighting budget battles in Sacramento, along with the others that I have itemized here. They will be made, the budget battles, that is, will be made either better or worse by the outcome of the bond election in a couple of weeks. If the bonds pass, that certainly will lessen the need to address those problems. However, it will have to address the fact that the passage of the bonds means that you'll have to begin paying them off, and that money will come from the state general fund on an annual basis. So once more, we just face a long series of problems at the state level, and the counties will be expected to pick up their share as usual. We're looking forward to drafting a 2007 platform for San Luis Obispo County. We hope that we can bat 1,000 next year, as we did this year. We will be inviting your comment on the platform, and I'd be happy to answer any questions, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Peterson. Any questions from board members? Mr. Patterson?
No questions, Mr. Chair. Thank you. But I would like to comment that Mr. Peterson and his staff has performed exceptionally well on behalf of the county. And every time we've gone to him, he's stepped up and provided the information and services that we've requested. So I look forward to developing the 2007 platform with my colleagues on the board, and hope that we have the successes this next year that we've had in the past.
Thank you, Supervisor. Keep your fingers crossed.
Thank you, Mr. Okay. Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank
Always
you.
Good to see you. Thank you. Well, that will move on to the public comment period. We'll do the honors with Ms. Rodewald to give us some guidance as we get closer to the election time.
Good morning, Julie Rodewald, County Clerk Recorder. Just wanted to remind voters, it's now 14 days before the election. There's still time to get absentee ballots mailed to them. We have issued over 65,000 absentee ballots. The most we've ever issued in past elections was 65,957, I think, for the 2004 presidential election. So we're well going to top that with still over a week to mail ballots out to people. Yesterday was the close of registration. We saw a lot of activity in our office yesterday. It's very encouraging. We hope that that will continue through to Election Day and that we'll see the kind of turnout that this election deserves. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Hill, followed by Al Barrow.
Good morning. Adam Hill, Grover Beach. Well, it's 2 weeks to the election. I believe this is the last board meeting until that date. I'm happy to report that a large number of current and former public officials have come out against Measure J, and this group includes one current and a few former county supervisors, some city council members from the cities of Arroyo Grande, Atascadero, Morro Bay, and San Luis Obispo, and quite a few current and former planning commission and advisory council members from all over the county. I'm certain the opinions of these folks are wide-ranging, but I'm also certain that they've come out against Measure J because they understand the serious consequences that will result if this defective and unbalanced initiative passes. So 2 weeks to go, and I don't know anyone who honestly believes this situation will peacefully conclude one way or another the day after the vote. What is likely to occur is what we've already experienced: divisiveness, polarization, personal attacks, and an erosion of community spirit. I do not doubt for a second that all the residents on both sides of Measure J love this community, but I am worried about where we're headed with so much acrimony among us. Will we as a county, as a community, be able to band together beyond ideology and personal agendas in order to address the crucial issues confronting us, the crisis in affordable workforce housing, the gradual sprawl of development and the elimination of open space and ag land, the lack of economic development beyond strip malls and box stores? Because nothing less than the character of the county is at stake. If we continue to splinter off into factions, if we continue to pull apart and become more insular and suspicious, then we will fail not only ourselves, but future generations. We live in a special place, and we need to preserve it and enhance it. Those needn't be and shouldn't be oppositional goals, but they will be if we remain divided and distrusting and narrow-minded. And finally, I just want to say to the board, and remind particularly the three-vote majority, that once a place becomes like every other place, it essentially becomes placeless, and there's no going back. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Barrow, followed by Debbie Kloss. We'll have some help come forward. Meanwhile, Ms. Kloss, would you please proceed?
My name is Debbie Kloss, and the in-home supportive services providers and the United Domestic Workers of America would like to express our appreciation to the members of the county bargaining team who worked with us to reach fair and reasonable terms of our recently negotiated Memorandum of Understanding. We also want to thank the board in advance for their approval of the MOU and to say that we look forward to creating a working environment of mutual cooperation and respect with the newly structured public authority and IHSS governing board. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you. Are we ready? Okay. Mr. Kovacs? Followed by Gwen Taylor.
Yes, I am Michael Kovacs, and one of your constituents, expecting honest representations from you throughout the terms we elected you for. Number one, your 11% pay raise issue was scheduled for today, but for public hearing. Chairman Kachu, why have you Kocho, why have you postponed it for next week after the election of two of your colleagues that are going to start with 11% pay hike right away? Is this honest thing to do? I don't think so. Number two, and much, much more importantly, yesterday, capitals and countries throughout the world were celebrating the 50th anniversary of the Hungarian Revolution that turned out to be the beginning of the end to the Soviet regime and its Cold War with the United States 33 years later. Now, I devote my 1 minute of silence to those many heroes who died for that cause and helped to bring peace to the earth. Thank you very much.
Are we ready? Okay. Mr. Barrow, followed by Ms. Taylor.
Good morning, board members and public. My name is Al Barrow, president of Citizens for Affordable and Safe Environment and Coalition for Low-Income Housing. Today I'm going to talk about a turnkey affordable sewer for Los Osos. The turnkey sewer project implements a sewer for Los Osos in a fast, affordable way that is frequently used to build utilities. It costs about the same for private money as state revolving fund loans. The state, the Golden State Water here is an example of privatization, one of our local water companies. A turnkey project brings us into compliance with the regulatory agencies faster than a state revolving fund loan. It is much less red tape. We have several offers on the table now. Pentair Incorporated, a $3 billion company, offered Los Osos a turnkey project last fall. Orenco, step collection experts, septic tank effluent pump collection specialist, presented their turnkey concept at the last CSD meeting. You can see that on Channel 20. They compared the advantages of a low-pressure collection system that could be installed by horizontal drilling to trenching technology. Gravity sewer. Pentair, who's already designed a low-pressure system for Los Osos, has offered again to show us a cost-effective project that will fly four executives here. This option needs serious consideration by LLCSD and the county. The pond treatment system, already designed by Nelson Environmental, costs around $8 million with beneficial reuse of nitrogen and ammonia. Step collection with pond treatment should be under $50 million total capital cost. And the operation and maintenance about one-tenth of the Montgomery Watson conventional plan, according to recent estimates by engineers and pipeline companies. STEP has been adjudged to be the environmentally preferred project. Ponds have the added advantage of reducing sludge so dramatically compared to any other treatment. Only residuals need to be removed 20 to 30 years. They also take spills far less often. They are one-tenth the cost of operation and maintenance compared to previous plans the county is still considering. The aerated ponds have only one moving part, an air blower, or huge savings in replacement and repair, unlike conventional. Bacteria-based pond treatment is the lowest energy and maintenance cost. non-Escher land is available with willing sellers in the ag area east of town. It is the lowest social impact and odor control problems, unlike mechanical treatment. Nelson Environmental, the pond designer, came to Los Osos twice with complete pond design. This is an avenue for a fast, affordable, and sustainable sewer. The sewer bill of $75 a month is a hardship. $200 to $350 bills that the county is considering is out of the question for 90% of Los Osos residents.
Carl, would you conclude, please? Your time is
up. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Ms. Taylor, followed by George Taylor.
Good morning. My name is Gwen Taylor. I'm a resident of Los Osos. I'm also a taxpayer. Los Osos is a community of rumor, scandal, full of gossip and backstabbing. Does this sound familiar? It should. Other communities in the county that have the same profile are not going to be mentioned. Not only CSDs, but cities that are in this community, this county, also have the same profile. Electronics communications have been used as a method of influencing this board by those of so-called political influence in Los Osos. This is creating distrust of our county. The county has asked for an audit of the Los Osos CSD after Judge Paquet, LAFCO, Assemblyman Blakesley, and the bankruptcy court are all conducting audits. Does this board believe the county auditors have an auditing insight that the above auditors do not have? Or is this board being used as a political pawn? Last Tuesday, a gentleman at this board suggested that a county ombudsman, or if you please, a watchdog organization be developed. Many years ago, there was such an organization of public interested citizens from every area of the county that reviewed the actions of the county overall and addressed the actions if in question. There is now a sitting supervisor that was a member of this organization. It can only be hoped and suggested that a group once again be formed as an ombudsman or watchdog and review the actions of the county as more unorthodox actions are taken by this county board. A public interest action organization will help keep the county more transparent. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Taylor, followed by David Dugan.
Good morning. I'm George Taylor from Los Osos. On October 19, 2006, last Thursday, the citizens of Los Osos, as well as the members of this board, were invited to hear Mr. Terry Bounds, founder and operating officer of Orenco Systems Incorporated. He was there to offer Los Osos a less costly and environmentally acceptable alternative to an outdated conventional sewer system. Orenco is offering our community an opportunity to self-finance our sewer solution by presenting a system by which Orenco will design, build, and finance the project. This is referred to as a turnkey project. Los Osos will have control of the project from start to finish, which I repeat includes financing. Orenco has helped hundreds of small communities all across the country, several of those on the coast of California, design, build, and maintain low-cost, reliable, effluent sewers. Depending on terrain, effluent sewers are often one-half or less expensive than a conventional gravity sewer. Another significant factor is cost reduction in its treatment, because only low-strength effluent is collected from septic tanks. The solids remain to decompose and then turn into mostly liquid, whereas a conventional system collects solids and liquids all together, which raises treatment costs greatly. These are just a few of the things that you might have learned if you had accepted our invitation. It would have been nice to see at least our supervisor there. Effluent sewer technology has improved so dramatically over the past several decades that they are now highly recommended by the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Dugan, followed by Eric Greening.
My name is Dave Dugan, Los Osos, candidate for LCSD. I'm going to talk about voting. Maybe I'll talk about other things too, but there are people going around in Los Osos saying that the CSD election is already a done deal because of the absentee ballots. And I'd like to say that even if it's by one vote, every vote counts. And that you shouldn't listen to people trying to tell you that no need to go vote now, that this decision has already been made by the people through the absentee. That's just a falsehood and not a good enough reason not to come out to vote. But this is a huge election in my mind, considering the national the gubernatorial and races as well as all the majors. So, yeah, definitely get out and vote. And I also want to touch upon, I heard 2701 that was mentioned here earlier. That bill was, well, many pages is when I read it, and it had a lot of things to do with flood control and integrated water, and a lot of that was cut out. There was a section of that bill that I liked that I wished had not been cut out. And that it has to do with flood control and such. What I don't know why it was cut out. I never asked it to be. Also, I heard somebody talk about acrimony and people not getting along because of Major J. Well, that's the nature of the beast. That's why we have elections. That's why if people don't get along, they don't go out and burn down each other's houses and shoot each other. We have elections. And so I would encourage people to stay peaceful in their actions. I am no angel in that area. Sometimes in the recent past, I have shown I've had a few problems in my life, but in the last few years, I've tried to change my life around and be part of the community and the process. And so, if anybody out there that thinks that you can't be part of this process because of your background or where you were raised or your education or problems you may have had in the past, I would just say that that's not true. You can be part of the process, and I'm a perfect example of that. And you can change your life around just by being part of the community. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Greening, followed by Richard Sadowski.
Good morning. I'm Eric Greening. I always appreciate Don Peterson's thorough and lucid reports relative to state legislation and his efforts on our behalf in Sacramento. His service to us represents the gold standard by which efforts of any other legislative advocate should be measured. In stark contrast, you recently chose to retain for a trial period a counterpart in Washington, D.C., who offered no perceptive thoughts about issues affecting this county, much less principles, but based his appeal only on his alleged ability to bring in the loot. While our county should get its fair share of revenues, and it's a good idea to have a watchdog looking at that, having a lobbyist in Washington to milk the notorious earmarking system does not speak well of us. We should not be exploiting earmarks, but taking a stand to reform them. If we are to invest in a presence of Washington, we should look for someone with the stature and erudition of Don Peterson, if we can find it. That said, I do take issue with how Mr. Peterson characterized the bond issues on the ballot, although he somewhat redeemed himself with his concluding caveat. He emphasized the money they would provide a possible total of $47 billion statewide if they all passed. Not mentioned was the $90 to $100 billion our children would have to pay the bondholders over the next 30 years. This multi-billion annual chunk vacuumed out of every state budget would be at the expense of maintaining ongoing state operations. Bonds are a transfer to present-day capital from future operations, and we should not be mistaken about that. There is nothing proactive or visionary about sending this kind of a bill to our children, especially now that they are so hugely overburdened on the federal level by debts people aren't even talking about, but they are enormous. Although we voters need to absolutely scrutinize every single bond issue, they may have certain values at times, may be necessary at times, we should set an extremely high bar in our minds for them to overcome for our children's sake. And so I just add that caveat to Mr. Peterson's otherwise very thorough and lucid report. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Sadowski, followed by Lindy Owen.
Richard Sadowski. I'm a member of the American Society of Mechanical Engineers and a holder of a California Water Environment Association Grade 4 Wastewater Collection Certificate. I have respectfully requested this board to agendize a public forum with the presence of the District Attorney, Gerald T. Shea, to no avail. That said, I want to say that property rights do not supersede public health and safety. The county's problems will continue unchecked, unsolved, as long as Gerald T. Shea, the DA, is allowed to continue to conduct his private business behind closed doors and not be accountable for the position he holds. The citizens of San Luis Obispo County deserve a district attorney that will protect their democratic rights to due process and not force them into litigation to protect that right. The gentleman that spoke at the presentation, Mr. Peterson, was talking about enforcing flood control. Enforcing a law, you need somebody to do it. And that eventually comes to the burden of the district attorney. And having legislation that's not enforced is basically a mute subject as long as Gerald T. Shea is not representing the people, but his private permit facilitators like Jeffrey H. Edwards, Robert N.'s company in Cayucas, or J.F. Shea Company, Inc. in Southern California. I would once again respectfully ask this board, prior to the election, I know that Gerald T. Shea is not running, but prior to the election that's coming up, that we agendize a meeting in a public forum where we could ask Gerald T. Shea with regards to selective enforcements and the continual conflicts of interest within this county. Thank you for allowing me to address this board.
Ms. Owen.
Good morning. Lindy Owen from Los Osos. I wanted to note that there was a glaring omission in headlines on Friday in the Tribune, and it was the fact that we had a private company come to Los Osos and give us a presentation on the system that we have fought for about 8 to 15 years, and it's a design, build, and finance program, and the price is one-third of what we were left with from the leftovers of the prior CSD and what your county staff is looking at currently. Again, my concern is that Paul Hood spoke and said that when they were looking at alternatives, they would not look at collection. Collection is 70% of the cost of a sewer system. You cannot ignore the, if there is an alternative to collection, it must be looked at. And I think we have a very viable method that would work very well in Los Osos. And I don't know why it isn't being looked at. There seems to be some problem, whether it's just wanting to live in the dark ages, I don't know. The interesting part of the presentation is not only would they begin to use some of the gravity that would be available in Los Osos to collect on the hills. They would not need the small pump that would be in each septic tank. It would assist the entire system to work. They also suggested putting smaller plants in a couple areas of town so that you would not be pumping water as far, and you would also have purple pipe return in the immediate area to redistribute. Again, the differences are pretty amazing. Sewer plant takes people flush and forget. They throw anything they want down their toilet, and it's gone. And what comes out on the other end is a highly expensive process to break down and treat and try to clean. And you never do really clean that water very well and try to return it for reuse. An effluent sewer makes everyone a little more responsible for their own septic tank and what goes in there. They keep their biology going, or they have to have the pumpers come out. So the difference is in so many ways. It's environmentally preferred, and if it's one-third of the cost and at least one-third of the operation cost, it needs to be looked at. So I beg everybody to please keep it on the table. And I do hope that Mr. Hood and Mr. Ogren, as well as anybody that's interested in wastewater treatment for the future of this county, review that hour and a half presentation. It's well worth it. There is a great future in wastewater, and it's our opportunity to jump into it now. Thank you.
Thank you.
David.
That was the last request to speak on the public comment period. This time we'll move to our consent agenda. And what I have done, because we were very active with some requests concerning item B4, before I go to the public at large, I'm going to invite Meg is with us, and also Mr. Alsop is walking in. I have invited them to come and comment on this item so we have a better understanding as what it is. So, Mr. Alsop, very good timing. Would you come forward, please, and comment on item B4 for us?
Good morning. Ron Alsop, County Office of Emergency Services. I'd like to ask my counterpart, Meg Swearingen, to come up and stand at the other podium since she actually wrote the plan or was the lead for the plan. I might have a couple of questions I can answer. First, I'd like to take a moment to put in a PowerPoint slide here. My apologies for not having it ready, but it'll take me about 10 seconds.
Now that he's under stress, he's not going to do it.
There we go. It took a little bit longer. But the slide is up, and we'll have the clerk here get it up. But what we're doing here today is asking you to adopt a document that we call the County Cities Nuclear Power Plant Emergency Response Plan Part 1. I think part of the misunderstanding we have is there's some misnomer in the term plan. I'll start with and refer to the chart up here on the board. Where we get our authorities for developing emergency plans are initially from the county code, which is actually from your board, which, of course, has input from the public. So our authorities to develop, and, in fact, we're required to develop by county code, emergency ordinances, various emergency plans. Below that, our next level of authority comes from what we refer to as the county's emergency operations plan, which is the master emergency operations plan for the county. That's where we have all of our policies, and various procedures, and that's a document that is approved by your board in its entirety. It's a rather lengthy document. Not the length of a document has anything to do with quality, but there's a lot of information in that. It's about a 400-page document that provides policy and direction on how the county will respond to emergencies and how the emergency plans will be laid out. And, in fact, we're updating that right now. We will have that brought forward in a presentation or a public hearing item within the coming 12 months or so. It's something we update every 4 or 5 years. Below that, the emergency operations plan are basically, for lack of a better term, are the subplans that we get into a little bit more detail on, and that includes our standalone, our earthquake emergency response plan, dam failure evacuation plan, and so forth, tsunami plan, and some other items. As far as the county city's nuclear power plant itself, We have it broken up into, for lack of a better term, that perhaps we can come up with a better resolution in the next round of how to define these. It's broken up into three parts, part one, two, and three. Part one that you're being requested to approve today is actually really an overview document of the remaining portions of the emergency response plan. So in particular, part three, which is made up of 55 standard operating procedures, which are essentially 55 standalone emergency response plans for responding to a nuclear power plant accident. Now, to give an example of one of those, there's about 181-page document for the California Highway Patrol that spells out how they will respond to a nuclear power plant incident. All the 55 or so of them are listed in the back pages of the administrative plan. There's guidance for the American Red Cross, for the school districts, County Office of Education, Caltrans, and various jurisdictions, as well as particular issues that we need to deal directly with. For example, there's a standalone standard operating procedure for public information. There are also some in there that we deal with our health physicist type activities. For example, dose assessment and calculating wind direction and which is the process that we use to make recommendations on when to evacuate. So basically, to put that in a nutshell, there's some procedures we have where our health experts, weather folks, all get together and look at the emergency, determine what's happening at the plant, and based on weather and other conditions, they make a recommendation on what areas should be evacuated. So as you can see, it's quite a complex situation. So getting back to part one, what part one is in essence a summary document that explains the rest of the emergency response plans. The reason we have this is to illustrate getting back to the standard operating procedures. I was going through the documents the other day on the computer, not literally counting pages, and when I got to 2,000 pages, I stopped. So it's quite a complex document. And there are also some other separate documents. We note in part two there's some support documents, maps, graphics, and other reference documents. And part of our other reference documents include evacuation times assessment. We have a professional study done every 10 years, and it's updated every 5 years, on how long it will take to evacuate various areas around Diablo Canyon under various certain situations. So that document is included in here. So what we're pulling into part one, the administrative plan, is in essence an overview of all the other documents. And I'm going to, can I ask you to forward, it's only a two-slide PowerPoint, I assure you it won't be up here too much longer. And to give an illustration on the precedent setting for this, this is something that we do with our general emergency plans too. Looks like it's a little bit hard to read up there, but what we have up there is in essence a copy of the cover sheet for a similar document that we have for our general emergency response plans. And this document is titled Emergency Management Coordination in San Luis Obispo County. And this document gives an overview of all the non-nuclear power plant emergency response plans. You saw some of them on there, the tsunami plans, earthquake, so on. And we also have various organizations that work on terrorism planning, public health emergencies, with the cities and the county get together on tsunami planning, fire chiefs get together. And this document provides an overview of how that system works. Getting back to what we're asking you to approve today, it's a similar document. This document that we have illustrated up on the screen is not approved by you because it's an overview document that explains the rest of the plans. Essentially, today's agenda item that we're asking you to approve, the real reason that we're asking you to approve it is we're required by the Federal Emergency Management Agency to have an approved plan. And so we're asking you to approve this overall summary. In real life, if today you chose to not approve this, we could just simply title it an administrative overview document, but we'd have to come up with some process to satisfy the federal requirement that we do have an approved nuclear power plant emergency response plan. And to close out and then summarize what's actually in the document, it's available on our website. It has been available on the county website. I'll slow down here, which is all one word, Slo County OES, S-L-O County O-E-S .com. Again, note the .com, slocountyoes.com. It's been on there for a couple of weeks, I think. And, of course, we have a copy available in our office for review and would otherwise make copies available to anybody that would like to see one. But it basically has an overview of the hazards from nuclear power, the planning basis we use, why do we do this, and how do we do it. And a lot of the planning basis, in fact, most of it, come from federal requirements. So really what this document is doing is showing you how we're fulfilling our federal requirements. It talks about the emergency management system, which we'd last last week, your board approved the county adopting and using the National Incident Management System. That's included in this document as a reference and an update. And it provides, it shows a concept of how we operate. Again, an overall concept of operations. The actual operations are in that Part 3, which are approved by the various experts that have authority over those. Getting back to the CHP, that standard operating procedure is approved by the CHP commander. You know, the Caltrans one is approved by the Caltrans district manager, and so on and so forth. And then it talks about emergency resources and how we keep the documents updated. And to close, I would like to note on the Part 3 documents, which are real operational plans, where the rubber hits the road, so to speak, we update those as often as every 3 months with phone numbers and name changes, contact changes, and no more infrequently than every 2 years. So those are constantly being updated. It's one of the things our office does here. And obviously it takes a lot of coordination on our part with the various cities and various state agencies. So in summary, what we're doing is making sure that the left hand knows what the right hand is doing. And with that, I'll ask Meg if I've missed anything or if you're happy to take any questions.
Ms. Warrington, do you have anything to add?
I would like to add that our office does provide CDs that are redacted or sanitized for both the Cal Poly Library and for the County Cities Library here in San Luis, that those CDs are redacted or sanitized with personal information so that we are not putting out people's home addresses and home phone numbers and cell phone numbers, but that they go into a reference area and that our office is very happy to provide additional copies so that those that are in branch libraries can also view that. That also some entities or some agencies do provide their standard operating procedure on their own website, such as the San Luis Coastal Unified School District has their standard operating procedure on their website as well.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We appreciate your being here this morning. With that, I will go to the public at large, and as you notice, our consent agenda will be in two parts. One part, old items under B's, and then as we get to the in-home support services, we'll change our hats and take input from the public at large at that time. But I'll do it all in a process where we're clear with Madam Clerk with her blessings. First request to speak is Mr. Greening, followed by Jane Swanson, Lucy Jane Swanson.
I'm Eric Greening on item B4. I am requesting that you pull this off consent and agendize this for a full public hearing. This is due to the importance of the document, its incompleteness, and the short time it has been available to the public. Relative to incompleteness, not only are the parts 2 and 3 that this is an overview of not available, but Part 1 is itself incomplete. I refer specifically to the absence of Table 3.8, evacuation times due to various levels of earthquake, and of any footnotes or narrative that might explain this. This is a critical missing piece, given that a likely cause of a radioactive release would be a major earthquake, which would also affect the roads. On the off chance that you fail to postpone this for a full hearing, let me say I am thankful for all the work that has gone into this, but have lots of questions. Page 3-7, paragraph 33, is the intent for people to be supplied with potassium iodide before a disaster or to accomplish distribution during with snarled transportation and people headed every which way? Page 5-18 speaks of distribution at congregate care centers, but I hope that's just a supplement to a more thorough pre-distribution. Page 3-51, table 3.6, the capacity of 101 is given as double the capacity of each interchange feeding in, but there are more than two interchanges feeding in. Wouldn't there be gridlock somewhere if the interchanges were functioning at capacity? Page 3-58, table 3.10, travel time of radioactivity after release. This assumes wind speeds of 2.5 to 10 miles per hour, but the wind rose on page 3-27 shows that the prevailing direction averages over 15 miles an hour and is often faster. Page 5-13, it's assumed most non-car-owning households would be evacuated by family and friends. Quick, time to go. What non-car-owning household will you go out of your way to take with you? There is also the hope that bus drivers, after delivering folks to safety, will return to harm's way to pick up more people. This is not in their contracts. I appreciate Meg Swearingen's visit to the Regional Transit Advisory Committee. She said other emergency responders might take over the buses if bus drivers wouldn't. But how many are competent to drive a bus? So many questions, so little time. Please give this a public hearing. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Swanson, followed by Michael Kovacs.
Jane Swanson, I'm speaking as an individual and also as spokesperson for the San Luis Obispo Mothers for Peace, the group which has been monitoring emergency planning for Diablo Canyon since there were such things. We've been involved over 30 years. I'm sure the board knows that. I'm joining Eric in asking for a full hearing of the part one. I understand that it is an overview, and I've asked Mr. Alsop to put up his first chart because it's useful to me to explain one of my main points, his slide he had there. Thank you. The boxes that show part one, part two, part three, they all have the arrow going from county, city's nuclear power plant emergency plan. I see those arrows. Great. What I have in my mind, oh, it's there. Oh, goody, then you're validating my point. From where I was sitting, I couldn't see the lines that connect the part one, part two, part three. Thank you, Mr. Alsop. I thought they weren't there. I'm glad they're there. Okay, they need to be there. And upon that connection of one, two, and three rests my main point. Thank you. You can do what you want with your slides. It seems very illogical. I didn't mean anything rude by that. I meant he didn't have to stay at the meeting if he has other business. It seems very illogical to me to approve of part one without a full public hearing when parts of part one as well as two and three are still under revision. It's not just the constantly updated stuff in part two that's being revised constantly as explained, but I did view part online of the document part one, which is 176 pages long. And I did notice some sections under emergency planning that are under revision right this very minute. And I don't understand why this body would want to adopt or approve of a document which is not yet complete. So that's my first point. Another concern that I have is within the parts of the plan I had time to read, there are repeated statements of, and I quote, extremely low probability of an off-site release of radiation, unquote. There's nothing that I could see within part one that tells where this judgment or statement comes from. I can imagine it might be PG&E, might be the NRC, might be OES, but I don't know. And I would think the board would want to know who's making that assessment and what the implications are. I want to know those things. And hopefully this statement of low probability, unquote, is balanced somewhere in those 176 pages by the recognition that the consequences of such a radiation release, even if low probability, would be truly disastrous on a gigantic scale. So you've got something that the probability isn't high. I actually agree with that. I think it's inevitable somewhere it'll happen. But
Ms. Swanson, your time is up,
ma'am. All right. So I again ask you to consider giving a full hearing to this for more input.
Mr. Kovacs, followed by David Dugan.
Yes, I'm Michael Kovacs, one of the Citizens for Honest Representation. This is B2, Consent Agenda Item B2. Now, this is another proposal by staff for continued growth of this county government that has always been rubber stamped by your honorable board. Without exception, during the past 18 years, I have been coming here. Now, this one, addition of personnel and increase of the county budget, salaries, compensations, and benefits, because of because of the issuance of medical marijuana identification cards. By God, does this function, does this task necessitate the addition of another person or personnel? Haven't you considered your board in general, and you, Supervisor Patterson, in particular, haven't you considered to order the staff to have this function or task be absorbed by the almost 3,000 headcount people of this county, of this tiny little county? Supervisor Patterson, we elected you to slow down, preferably stop, the runaway growth of this county government. So far, you haven't done a thing about that. We are not delighted. We have not been delighted watching your votes and paying attention to your voting records. Now, B3, I just wanted to ask, what is the net effect of this action by the county administrator shuffling people around or job titles? What is the net effect on the county budget dollar-wise?
Mr. Dugan, followed by Kimberly Daniels.
Dave Dugan, Los Osos. I've just recently, in the last year, started attending, well, I'll be speaking on B13, which is the allocation of funds to the Los Osos Community Advisory Council. I've just recently, I guess within the last year or so, been attending these, and these meetings are a chance for the public to really have a chance to have a voice in their community and what goes on in the community. And I would hope that more people would attend. Our second district supervisor tries to attend all those, and I thank her for that. And even though she may, there may be spillover from the Los Osos CSD into the LOCAC, which is sometimes is not appropriate. She has taken a lot of flack when she has attended those. But I really, really want people to understand, if you want to be involved in decision makings of things that actually happen in your community, that would be a good place to go to voice your concerns or your praises. For as many people that's on that board, I believe, which is more than a dozen at least, a lot of work does get done. And a lot of people do review a lot of projects, and they actually have really short meetings. Almost, I think the longest I ever saw was 3 hours, and that was long for them. So it really isn't long, drawn out, and contentious. It can be. I approve of this allocation of funds. Actually, I think it should be a little more. Maybe we could start have a recording of this, if not audio, but video, some of these meetings that are really have to sometimes the subject matter is concerning the cutting downs of several hundred trees or the putting in new projects being put in contrary to the basin plan and the prohibition zone. Things do sometimes sneak past, and we have new things being built in Los Osos getting around the prohibition. And you should be really concerned about those things, and this is one of the places that you can voice that concern. Thank you.
Thank you. Danielle, followed by Lindy Owen.
Good morning, Chairman Shajian and board members. My name is Kimberly Daniels. I'm the general manager of the County Employees Association, and I'd like to address item B3. I'd like to reiterate my comments from last week that SLOCIA supports parity in salary for all county employees. Last week, SLOCIA delivered a binder of information for each board member showing the inequities in the job classes that we represent. We are respectfully requesting, again, that your board address and correct these inequities in the same fashion and using the same counties that you are utilizing for salary comparisons for your positions and for the proposed position of Assistant County Administrative Officer. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Ms. Owen?
Lindy Owen from Los Osos. Item B4, the evacuation issues with Diablo have always been almost humorous to me, to assume that if we can't get through a standard Friday evening traffic jam, that we would ever have any opportunity to really make a complete evacuation out of this county were Diablo to have an incident or any other natural disaster or terrorist disaster. And I've just been reading through, I know there's 470 pages, I've on between 3-9, page 3-9 and 3-14, it pretty much talks about the evacuation plans, and it talks about in hours that people would be getting back to their homes to get pets, et cetera, and then back on the road to go on with their evacuation. It's not going to happen. And I don't know why we allow these kinds of discussions to even go on when we know that people are not going to be able to get out of the area. Probably one-tenth of the community will be able to leave before it's complete log jam. What I would like to see included, I don't know if it is, but because I have not read all the pages, is an interim emergency plan for people that will choose to stay at home. And if it is a radioactive event, I know that what you take for your thyroid, but there are some tips that could be shared with the community, and I think those are far more important than telling everybody to jump in a car and try to evacuate. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Taylor?
Good morning. My name is Gwen Taylor, and I'm talking about the monies for community project funds for the Advisory Council. Ever since the Advisory Council has been in operation in Los Osos, I have been a strong supporter. All the time that I am available, I attend. We have many projects that are coming up before the community that the community knows nothing about. If it were at all feasible, possible, any way of getting additional funds so that this Advisory Council could be on television, although not everyone in the community can afford a cable, there are many people who would watch it if we had the availability of it being televised. One of the major projects we have now going on in our community, which is a very serious situation since we're having so many trees removed from the community, is the potential removal of 7 trees between Binscarth, between Donna and Doris on Binscarth, which is under Coastal Conservancy. Those trees have been there for years. In 1973, a gentleman by the name of Gerald Noble tried to bulldoze them all down. At that time, the supervisor put in his, shall we call it, demands that be stopped. What I am saying is if we had the ability to televise information out to the community, more people would know what is happening as it is now, only if you attend, and many people don't like to go out at night, if you are older, would not know only if it were televised. Please allow additional funding for it to be televised. Thank you.
Thank you. And that was the last request to speak under consent agenda items. At this time, I will close to the public and bring it back to the supervisors. Ms. Bianchi, any items?
Well, B13 for sure, just for a comment. Okay. And then I'm wondering if Mr. Alsop would like to respond to any of the questions from B4. I guess he would. He's coming forward.
Okay. Mr. Patterson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. B4 also to address separately, and B3 just for comment.
Sorry.
B2 for comment.
G2 for comment?
Yes.
And do your B4?
And B4, yeah.
For comment?
Yes, and perhaps separate action.
Okay. Mr. Ovid?
No items.
No items. So first item, numerical order, Mr. Patterson, B2.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just in response, that's the medical marijuana issuing. That action was adopted by the board on August 1st after consultation among staff from public health and law enforcement agencies. And it was determined that having that standardized system would be of benefit to primarily law enforcement and medical marijuana dispensaries. It gives positive ID to the user. The item on today's consent calendar is simply designating the cost of that, and it is a cost-neutral item requiring no new personnel to issue those cards. However, we may not recover full cost if the recipient is a Medi-Cal patient, in which case we only get 50% of the actual cost. So there may be a slight cost incurred by the county. So I just wanted to make that clear.
Appreciate that clarification. And Ms. Bianchi, before we go to Mr. Alsop and or Mr. Patterson.
I just wanted to know if Mr. Alsop wanted to respond to any of the questions.
I'd be happy to if you would like that.
Sure.
Okay, I'll start with Mr. Greening. And he noted the earthquake study in the document in there that we've left out of it. There's what that is a supplement, in essence, to our evacuation times assessment. As we've spoken on before, we actually have a professional study done on how long it would take to get out of the emergency planning zone, the various areas of the emergency planning zone under various circumstances. And there's also a separate study done based on earthquake response. You know, if we had a damaging earthquake, how much longer would it take out, which is a supplement document. We have an old study that we would like PG&E to update, so we didn't want to include the old times in the current plan. So it's one of these, again, it gets back to the issue of this is a summary plan of the other documents. That's referencing another document that's outside the scope of our office that we take and rely upon the experts, the geologists that do that, and the traffic managers to insert it and reference it in our emergency plan. So when that's updated, we'll include it. But it's not a document that is housed by the county or that we have any authority over. And we did not want to put the old times in there. So that's a pending issue that we're going to actually push PG&E on, who funds that study. As far as a couple of questions came up regarding potassium iodide, which is the medication that can be taken to block radiation from being absorbed into the thyroid. And yes, indeed, Eric, providing the potassium iodide at congregate care, that is the evacuation centers for lack of a better term for the moment, that is secondary to asking people or allowing people to keep it on hand in a personal use. As far as the traffic control points that came up with, I'm afraid I didn't catch the last young lady's name that spoke on before, but related to traffic control, as I noted earlier, I used an example of one of the standard operating procedures is for the California Highway Patrol. Well, the reason it's 181 or so pages is they staff a number of traffic control points and also have tow trucks out at pre-designated points and would have officers coming in from outside the area. So traffic flow would be handled on a professional basis by those folks. We take our evacuation times estimate, the California Highway Patrol standard operating procedure, and the Caltrans operating procedure, and those all work together to determine how traffic would be handled in an emergency. Because we're certainly no traffic experts, so we rely on those who are. As far as the prevailing winds, we do, and this will get into answer two questions in one as well, that Eric brought out that the lower wind speed, how long it would take for radiation to get to a certain area versus the prevailing wind speed. And to answer two questions in one, there are alternatives to evacuation, which is sheltering in place. And we do have procedures for asking people to do that as well. And I would like to add, I should have mentioned earlier, that tips on sheltering in place, evacuation, potassium iodide, how to be ready for Diablo Canyon, what to do if you don't have a car and you would need transportation if there were a Diablo Canyon emergency, are all in the new AT&T phone book and the old SBC phone book. Now, you have to have those particular phone books, either the former SBC or the AT&T branded phone book. There's a lot of information in there in the A pages, the white pages towards the front, just looking at the inside cover of the phone book, on what to do in these situations, and also like to put a plug for the following B pages, what to do an earthquake, and it has a first aid and survival guide. Also, we do have carless collection points, and we use buses. What's stated in the plan is that most of the carless population will be evacuated by friends or relatives. However, we do have a number of carless collection points predetermined. In fact, those are listed in the phone book as well, where we'd send around buses and other resources. In fact, Eric Greening was helpful to us in 2003 when we last adopted my earlier reference to the emergency operations plan, and he had some questions regarding carless collection. So we made some changes in that based on his input, and Eric actually put us to the test at the time, and he and I were having a discussion. He went to the nearest phone booth, dug out the phone book, and he found his nearest carless collection point with no problem at all. So we continue to have those procedures in place. As far as the duration of the release and how long it would last, we get that information from the FEMA nuclear regulations. It's actually provided by federal guidance. Finally, I would like to close that we do take this very seriously. Of course, we all live here too. You know, we're citizens as well as emergency managers and civil servants. And to indicate the intensity that goes into the Diablo Canyon emergency planning. In our Office of Emergency Services, we have 4.75 full-time staff, and we don't have a three-quarter person. She's a three-quarter time person. And of those positions, about 3.5 or 3.6 are funded to do Diablo Canyon nuclear power plant emergency planning, which, of course, benefits us with other emergency planning, too. We use the same emergency operations center for the San Simeon earthquake as we do for Diablo Canyon. So it is an issue we take very seriously, and we take it personally as well, and we'll continue to do our very best with it. And if I've missed anything, please let me know.
Why don't you hang around for a couple more minutes, Mr. Patterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Alsop, how long has this particular plan, Part 1, been available to the public, and was it advertised that it was available for public review?
No, it was not advertised. As with many of our actual emergency plans, per se, unless they're a particular document with a lot of policy information in it or a new plan, as you might remember we did late last year with the tsunami emergency response plan was a brand new plan, and our brand new local hazard mitigation plan, we give that widespread public attention. But for an update on an existing emergency plan, unless it has a number of policy implications or something that would need to come for your board for some major changes, then we generally look at those as our internal guidance and internal response plans and don't do widespread public advertising. But it has been on our website, to answer your question, for about 2 weeks now, and the only the public notification was, of course, when the agenda was posted.
You mentioned that this is really just an administrative document. Is there a timeline for its adoption or approval?
No, there's not. In fact, this document, because it is administrative, this particular one, it's been 12 years since we get a formal official update of the administrative plan, because it's just that, administrative documentation that needed updating. So there's no formal time frame for it. We are required to have a FEMA-approved plan, but there's no formal time frame for that. Now, there is a formal time frame that FEMA holds us to for our standard operating procedures. You know, when they come in to evaluate us in emergencies, in our emergency drills, you know, we need to have current plans and procedures. So the actual working documents are required to be updated at least every 2 years, but as far as this administrative portion, there's no deadline requirement that we're facing.
And the drill is tomorrow.
I'm sorry?
And the drill is tomorrow?
Yes, we have a federally evaluated nuclear power plant exercise tomorrow, or drill tomorrow.
Okay. You had mentioned in response to some of Mr. Greening's questions that there are sometimes omissions in the administrative document or some inconsistencies until the actual plan is brought up to, you know, current information, and then that's incorporated in the administration plan. Is that a problem if you're using that administrative document as the guide to where to go to the operational documents if they're not complete or the information isn't current?
No, it's not a problem. In fact, as I noted earlier, I think what we might have here is a naming issue, and that this is an overview of the other emergency response plans. As I noted and showed on the slide, we have another document that's similar for our other emergency response plans, and we actually note in that this is an overview document. So since this is an overview of the existing plans, the plans that would actually take precedence, like, for example, if the Highway Patrol came in and said, we're going to do something different in our standard operating procedure, that's their call. You know, they're the traffic experts out there in the field and law enforcement experts for traffic control. So if they're going to do something different in our standard operating procedure, and what you've adopted in the administrative plan is a bit different. What's going to hold true is that standard operating procedure that's their actual operating plan. So over time, yes, there may be some inconsistencies. Does it affect the public health and safety? Not in the very least. In fact, by not updating this plan, you know, arguably we should have updated it before now, so for the past couple of years or so, some of the stuff's been out of date. You know, the population hasn't been consistent. The evacuation times assessment has been updated. So the precedence is on these separate plans that exist and get approved by the specialists in the field or the separate studies that we have done, for example, the professional evacuation times assessment. So to answer your question, there will be, just by the nature of the beast, there will be some inconsistencies in the coming year as we get procedural changes. But I don't see that as being a conflict, and it certainly does not affect policy or the public health and safety at all.
Okay, and you had mentioned that during the next 12 months there will be an update of our emergency operation plan and that there will be public hearings on that document?
Yes, absolutely, and I use 12 months at the outside just to give ourselves a little breathing room. It will probably be much sooner than that. In fact, we're working on it now.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Olbert?
No, that's fine. We've talked enough on it.
I haven't done yet, but Mr. Ovid had his light on. I thought he was going to come in on B4. So thank you, Mr. Alsop.
Thank you.
Ms. Bianchi, B13?
Yes. You know, it would B13 is the item for me to allocate $1,500 from my community project funds to the Los Osos Community Advisory Council for operating expenses. And I think it would be absolutely wonderful if I had enough funding to provide AGP video for all three of my advisory councils, because there's one in Cayucas and there's one in Cambria as well. I just simply don't have enough funding for that. The alternative has been for the advisory councils to have websites so that people can look at those websites and determine whether the one in Los Osos is up and running yet or not, I don't know. But they can look at that website, and if there's an item on there that they're interested in, then they will have to accept the responsibility of coming to the meeting, whether that's a pleasant experience or not. But I just simply don't have enough money in my community project funds to fund AGP video for three advisory councils, much as I would like to. Thank you.
Thank you. With that, entertain a motion for the
move to approve consent calendar.
Moved by Supervisor Roberts, seconded by Supervisor Bianchi. A roll.
With the correction.
With amendments, yes. Okay.
The roll call, please.
Mr. Ovitt.
Aye.
Mrs. Bianchi.
Yes.
Mr. Patterson.
Aye.
Mr. Asajian.
Aye. At this time, we're going to adjourn ourselves as Board of Supervisors and reconduct the meeting as the Directors for In-Home Supportive Services. With that, Mr. Kovac on the item S1. And do we have help for Mr. Kovac to use the technical instruments we have?
Yes, where can I put down the...
Right in the center. Do we have a staff member can help Mr. Kovac that knows how to operate the projector? Mr. Flynn?
Mr. Asajian, Chairman Asajian, would you like me to introduce the item?
Yeah, introduce.
I will in a second. My apologies. And while Mr. Flynn is helping us with our technical instruments, would Madam Clerk introduce item S1, please?
Item S1 is the submittal of a resolution approving the negotiated memorandum of understanding with the United Domestic Workers of America, UDW, and establishing salaries and benefits for the represented employees. Recommend approval and instruct chairperson to sign.
Okay. With that, Mr. Edge, any comments?
It's on, Mr. Kovacs. Mr. Kovacs, it's on.
Can you make it full screen?
Well, then you have to go down.
Yes.
this agenda item again, just another of the numerous and countless agenda items producing salary increases, benefit increases, county government increases to be paid for by 250,000 population of this tiny little county. The current proposal in front of you is giving a 19% pay hike from the current fiscal year to the next, and another 10% pay hike from the next fiscal year to the other. The average salary in this county government has already been over 70% higher than those in the private sector in this county. We, the private sector, who is paying for your salaries and their salaries. Anybody in this board looked into the reasonableness of these outrageous pay hikes, 19%, and then again 10%. I don't know what they were the prior 3 years before. Anybody looked into it in this board? What about you, Supervisor Patterson? Are you going to this rubber stamp again, just like your predecessor did, whom we kicked out exactly because he has been doing this, and I hope you are going to stop doing this someday? What drives these never-ending demands, pay hike demands? Greed, lack of conscience, lack of scruple, or what? This is nothing less than a fiscal dictatorship that has been prevailing and running away unabated in this county. Each day and each week, each month and each year. When are you going to stop this nonsense?
Mr. Age.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I empathize with Mr. Kovacs' comments on this one. I think, as your board is aware, it wasn't until a measure passed by the state legislature just a few years ago that we were involved in negotiating with this particular group of folk. The state made a change, and these are the people that help unfortunate individuals who have a variety of ailments that need full-time or part-time assistance, and those assistants are frequently family members. I think you're all aware of how the AHSS program works, so I won't go into it in detail. The state, pushed by a couple of specific unions, changed the rules of the game on this one, and the net effect is we're required to negotiate with these folk and their unions. That's the law. We don't have a choice about it. And the funding parameters are essentially set by the state. As you know, we have some flexibility, and we have a county share of cost. Those details are listed in the financial considerations of this item. It's about, it varies, but around 15% of the total cost is the county share. In other words, that's what the county taxpayer contributes to that bill. Now, having said that, and obviously we analytically would prefer to be back in the old days where the county wasn't in a negotiating position with unions representing these folk, and they were essentially individual employees of individual care receivers. Whether that's a good or bad thing as a social issue is what was debated in Sacramento, and the settlement of that by our state legislatures was that's a bad thing and we're going to change it. I would, without arguing either way, I would point out, again, as your board is aware, that what we're talking about in terms of salary or compensation is this particular contract. As an example, the current hourly wage for these people is $9 an hour with minimum benefits attached to that. This particular contract would increase that $9 an hour to $9.50 an hour in 07 and then to $10 an hour in 08. So we're not talking about highly compensated employees here. And again, avoiding getting into the social policy discussion of whether it is a good thing or a bad thing, whether that compensation is appropriate or inappropriate, those issues are really settled and have been settled by the state when the state said these folk will be organized and can be represented by a union, and you, county or public authority, are required to negotiate in good faith within the financial parameters that are available. And that's where we are.
Thank you. Any comments or questions by supervisors? Mr. Patterson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just do have a brief comment. The name of the association we're working with here, In-Home Supportive Services, I think speaks for itself. These are folks that go into people's homes, people that need care on a full-time or part-time basis, and I feel we're quite fortunate to have folks that are willing to work for this level of compensation to go in and help out family members, neighbors, and others who need help. The alternative is to institutionalize these people at far greater costs, and so I think that this is a very beneficial program, cost-effective, and literally saves the county and state over the state millions of dollars. So I think it is a good move on our part, and I do support it.
And your motion?
I'll move approval.
Second.
Moved by Supervisor Patterson, seconded by Supervisor Bianchi. Roll call, please.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Mrs. Bianchi?
Yes.
Mr. Ovitt?
Aye.
Mr. Asajian?
Aye. Thank you. With that, we'll adjourn this meeting as the directors of the In-Home Supportive Services, and we reconvene as the Board of Supervisors and go on a very short break and return at 11:05.